Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. Welcome. We've got stories. New stories, old stories, all kinds of stories. My name is John Rappaport again, sitting in for Alex Jones. I'm an investigative reporter. You can find my material at nomorefakenews.com. Produced a film recently, American Addict, Prescription Addiction in America, will be premiering at the Seattle International Film Festival, May, June of this year, and also a 10-hour audio seminar you can pick up on my site called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous. Okay, enough with the plugs. I've got to start with Joe Biden. I mean, Joe is just too good to be true. I don't know why people don't follow this guy around 24 hours a day, because if anybody could be more wrong, I don't know who it is. Joe says that the plan to kill bin Laden was the most audacious plan in the last 500 years. Wow, Joe. In the last 500 years. Especially, I suppose, if bin Laden were already dead when the special forces went in there. And I've been asking for a long time now, ever since this raid, where is the dialysis machine? You know, people were saying, well, we want evidence that bin Laden was really there, and can you provide us any evidence? Well, according to all these sources who claimed that he was still alive and didn't die in 2001, he was receiving dialysis. He was always on the verge of dying. He was dying, when was it? In 2001, when the CIA visited him in a hospital in Europe? So where's the dialysis machine that they got from the house, the bunker in Pakistan? Never heard anything about it. Anyway, Joe says the most audacious plan in the last 500 years, which I assume means since the year 1500 or so, if my math is correct, nothing has even begun to rival this. Not the American Revolution, not D-Day. Take your pick. Joe, as always, is right on the money. And he says that the reason this is the most audacious was that there was something like a 48% chance of success of the mission. I'd really like to see how they calculated that down. And that if it had failed, Obama would certainly have been a one-term president. Really, Joe? He just said, well, we raided, we didn't make it, but we're still looking onward. Anyway, always got to lead with Joe. But let's get a lot more serious here and talk about a story that's up right now at Infowars.com. Aborted babies are being chopped up and sold to researchers all over America. Did you hear that? Aborted babies are being chopped up and sold to researchers all over America. This is actually nothing new, but we have new revelations. Fetuses at 10 or 20 weeks aborted it in clinics. Cells are shipped all over the U.S. to medical researchers. We're talking about brain cells in particular here, but not only that. The brain cells are injected into the eyes of patients with macular degeneration. Practice of shipping organs and body parts, of course, has been going on for a very, very long time. In fact, you'll see a link in the story on Infowars.com where aborted fetuses still alive had to be killed in order to harvest their body parts. So read that article, check out the links. This is part of the medical complex. This is what is happening in America and all over the world, and we're going to dig very deep into the medical cartel here today. This is why I'm here. John Rappaport, investigative reporter, sitting in for Alex Jones. We're going to go to a break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
B Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones today. We've got another big story up on InfoWars and also via Natural News. Jacob Stiler, 9-year-old boy in Michigan. Treated for cancer, then the scans were clear. No cancer. The Michigan Department of Human Services tried twice to force Jacob to have further chemotherapy with three drugs that admittedly have the risk of causing cancer. They lost. They lost their case. The Stiler family won. But, of course, the Michigan Department of Human Services didn't stop. They're back again. They've appealed the case. Now, the parents don't want Jacob to have more chemo. And on top of this, these three drugs, these three chemo drugs, are not approved for use in children. Do you get this? How this is working here, folks? I mean, this is like somebody knocking on your door. You open it. He's got a gun and he says, I've got a canister of poison here and I want you to drink it now. Because it's good for you. This is exactly what's going down here in Michigan. Jacob Stiler, 9-year-old boy, treated for cancer. The scans are now clear, but the doctors don't like this. They want to do more chemo with three drugs that have the potential to cause cancer. And who are they being backed by? The government. Hello. Michigan Department of Human Services has gone to court twice, and now the third time on appeal. The parents don't want their son to have more chemo from drugs that can cause cancer, drugs that have not been approved for children. Nobody seems to care in the government. In fact, they're forcing this, literally forcing it. Lesson, moral of the story, this is what is waiting for you and your children and your grandchildren up the road with national health care insurance, with Obamacare. I've been making this point for the last year and a half. More and more people seem to be listening, finally. Don't you understand what this is really all about, national health insurance? This is about forcing you to take only standardized treatments. And who decides that? The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This treatment is okay. This treatment you can't do. In fact, this treatment over here you must do. And if you don't, we kick you out of the program. And who knows, you could be put in jail. You could be fined because you're all in the system now. Everybody's in the system. You're all on this program. You see, everybody's been touting this insurance as it's the most wonderful thing in the world. And it gives everybody what they need. It gives them health care. It gives them medical care. It gives them all this wonderfulness that we all need and want and love from cradle to grave. Yeah, that's the cover story, folks. The actual story is it gives the pharmaceutical and medical cartel an opportunity to make you into a cipher, a number, and force treatments down your throat and make enormous profits at the same time, and also claim what treatments are not available. So you could be next. They could come to your door and they could say, guess what? We're going to give you chemo. No, you're not. Oh, yes, we are. Oh, yes, we are. We're going to go to court to insist on it because you're under the National Health Insurance Plan. You've got to do it. Well, you say, I want to present evidence in court that this doesn't work, that these three drugs can actually cause cancer, the ones that you put me on, and they haven't been approved for use in my child, whom you want to poison with these drugs. Well, certainly, sir, you can have your day in court, and then you go to court, and guess what you find out? Guess what you find out? You're not permitted to present any evidence. Evidence is not the issue, you see. The truth doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. The only thing that matters is the law. And the law is that you're now part of the system, part of the program. You can't opt out. That's the law. And your betters, the people who know far more than you do about science and medicine and so forth, have set the standards for what treatments are available and what you must get as treatment and what you can't get. So some judge is going to listen to you argue the merits of these chemo drugs? You, a lay person, are you kidding? Do you seriously think that you're going to get your day in court? I've been in court when this kind of thing happened. I've seen the federal government operate on people who they didn't want to allow to get out from under the thumb, the big iron fist of certain medical treatments, or who were going the other way on natural treatment. I've seen this come down. So Jacob Stiler, 9 years old from Michigan, is now being defended by a homeschooling legal association, and they're trying to get him off the hook so that he doesn't have to take three poisonous chemo drugs that can cause cancer when his cancer scans are completely clear. He's got to go to court to try to defend himself at 9 years old, so to speak, to live a healthy life, to not be killed by these drugs, because that's what we're talking about, to not be killed by these drugs. Sir, I'm 9 years old, and I'd like not to be killed by these drugs. May I speak? No, son, you may not. We know what's good for you, and this is what's going down. This is what is going down. Is this the first time something like this happened in the United States? Of course not. It's happened many times before. In fact, in the state of Michigan, there was another family that didn't want their child, this is now going back 15, 20 years, to be forced to take AZT, which was a failed chemotherapy drug that causes cells in the body to stop reproducing. And they had to go justify themselves over and over again. And the last, I was informed, they had escaped by the skin of their teeth. But this is the medical police state America that's coming down, folks. And this is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on The Alex Jones Show today. You can find my work at nomorefakenews.com. We're getting deeply, by degrees, into the medical cartel. Why is that so important? Because they are the leading edge of the New World Order. Or, if you want to call it something softer, the de facto global management system. And why are they the leading edge? Because they don't look political. They don't look left. They don't look right. They don't look center. They look neutral. We are the scientists. We're the priests in the white coats. We are the biggest religion on the planet. And you listen to us and you do what we say. This is body control, operant conditioning, programming, mind control. That the doctor has control over your life. That by feeding you debilitating toxic pharmaceuticals, which we'll go into in depth later on, eventually you will become so fuzzy, so debilitated, so unable to think, so disabled, that you will be one of millions and billions of people like you all over the planet who are, in capital letters, easy to control. This is called population control. That's what the medical cartel ultimately is all about. And this story about Jacob Stiler is just the tip of the iceberg on that. So let's flip over to the other side of the coin here. A story about somebody who survived when he should have been dead by conventional means because his mother went to something alternative, not exactly approved by the fascist dictators who decide what you can do with your own body and what you can't do. This is a story I covered some years ago out of Florida. A 15-year-old boy who was found by his mother, literally drowned in the swimming pool, rushed to the hospital, put on machines to keep him alive, after a couple of days, the doctors came up to the mother and they said, well, you know, shaking their heads, there's nothing we can do now. You can keep him on the machines, but really, he's dead. She didn't accept that. This was a woman with guts from here to the moon. So she began to go around, knocking on doors, knocking down doors, looking for alternative treatments. What could she possibly find? One thing after another, while her son was still on the machines, and the doctors were telling her to take him off. She finally found a doctor who said that hyperbaric oxygen might help. It's a treatment. You get in a tank, you receive oxygen from somebody who's trained, not just somebody off the street, in how to administer oxygen at slightly higher pressure than at sea level. It was originally developed by the U.S. Navy to cure the bends. And that, the thesis went, oxygen might be able to get to aspects of the brain where the cells appeared to be dead, but they were actually only idling, like the motor of a car. This thesis was put forward by Dr. Richard Neubauer of Florida, Lauderdale by the Sea, who is a pioneer in extending the uses of hyperbaric oxygen. Okay, so the mother goes back to the doctors and she says, and I've met her, okay? This is not just something I'm reading in the newspaper. We've talked extensively. We're going to go to a break here in about 30 seconds, but I'm going to tell you when we come out on the other side of the break what happened here with this child in hyperbaric oxygen, because as a reporter, it was one of the more astonishing things that I've ever experienced in my life, up close and personal. John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. Stay with us. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. John Rappaport back, sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show, talking about Ryan, a 15-year-old boy, on machines, dead, the doctor said, as good as dead. His mother's going around. She finds somebody who's got a theory about hyperbaric oxygen. You get in a tank, somebody who really knows what they're doing is a technician. Maybe this can wake up brain cells that were thought to be dead but are actually idling. So I hear this story, and she tells me that indeed she managed to force, literally, this is a big hospital, they've got this kid on machines, to transport him to another clinic where he's going to get hyperbaric oxygen. If you don't think that's a Herculean task, you try something like that sometime. Well, she pulled it off. 50 or 60 treatments with oxygen later, she tells me, her son is still alive after being pronounced dead. And he's off the machines. So, you know, do I believe this as a reporter? Do I not believe it? She says, let's talk. We meet in Los Angeles. We're sitting, I remember this very clearly, sitting by a fountain in West LA. We're talking. Very engaging woman. My son is alive. I'm saying yes, 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 yes. But, you know, I mean, the doctor said he was dead. She says, well, here we go. And I turn around, and there's her son, 15 years old, walking toward me. Now, I've confirmed the other parts of the story, so I know what happened before this. I know that what she's telling me is so. He's alive. He's walking. He walks up to me. He shakes my hand. This is a kid who drowned in a swimming pool, who was put on life support. The doctor said, no chance. And an alternative treatment was tried. The kid is now alive. His gait as he walks is somewhat awkward. When he talks, I'm not able to understand everything he says, but his mother can understand every single word he says, and they're going back and forth like gangbusters, right? The kid is alive. Without that treatment, there would have been no life for him. I mean, you know, it's like you're off, you're on. You're off, you're on. You're dead, you're alive. And I'm bringing this story up in contrast to the Jacob Stiler case of the 9-year-old who's being forced, if the court wins, to be poisoned with 3 chemo drugs. Because I'm also telling you that this whole national health insurance fiasco plan, op, as they say in the intelligence racket, it's an op, an operation, is designed to force you into a system where you must take certain treatments, many of which will be extremely toxic, and you will be denied treatments that you would want to explore on your own, such as the one that saved the life of this 15-year-old Ryan with hyperbaric oxygen. Yes, no, on, off. This is the strategy. This is what is going on up the road. This is what is waiting for you. Yes, the death panels and so on and so forth. But behind all of that, and I'm basing this on 30 years of experience as a medical investigative reporter into fraud, into deep conspiracy, if you will, and I will. They are going to tailor and shape and list all of the treatments that will be permitted and not be permitted for every single condition under the sun that you can imagine. They've already said it as much. I mean, it's an open story. Department of Health and Human Services, a cabinet post under the president. They decide. The pharmaceutical cartel, of course, wants to eliminate alternative medicine and alternative health in the form of nutrients, herbs, nutritional supplements. That's their burgeoning competition. So what do they do to eliminate it? Why was the pharmaceutical cartel so behind this whole idea of nationalized health insurance? Well, of course, on the one hand, they get paid. They're guaranteed to get paid. But on the other hand, they can shape the future of all medical treatment and deny you what you really want and force down your throat what can hurt and even possibly kill you. John Rappaport, sitting in for Alex Jones. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with a very special guest.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. Robert Bales, sergeant, accused of killing 19 Afghan civilians. You all know the story. It's all over the place. A special guest coming on right now. We're going to discuss this story and the related whole issue of what's going on in the military. But before I bring this man on, I just have to tell you that I don't have too many heroes, but he's one of them. I met him, I'm going to say, 25 years ago now. Dr. Peter Bragan, MD psychiatrist, who wrote one of the great books of the 20th century involving science called Toxic Psychiatry that turned my thinking around completely as a medical investigative reporter on what was going on in the entire psychiatric profession with the toxicity of drugs and false diagnoses and so on. And he has stood up against his entire profession practically over the years, not only stood up but thrived and stood up against the pharmaceutical companies who have been trying to push psychiatric drugs down people's throats all over the place. And he's worked as expert witness in court on key decisions involving psychiatric drugs and violence and so on. Dr. Peter Bragan, B-R-E-G-G-I-N. I'm spelling it so you'll go to his site, www.bragan.com. Peter, welcome to the show.
John, it's a pleasure to be on for you. I probably, there's hardly anyone else that I would be doing what I'm doing right now. I was going to take a leisurely 2-hour drive to see a doctor in Syracuse with my wife, and I was thinking we're finally going to get to relax together. And then you called, and I said, I'm going to talk with John. I said, Ginger, how do you feel about having John on the phone for whatever time while we drive? She said, oh, for John, for sure. So okay. Here we are.
And we're really glad. Peter. Thanks. I appreciate it. I really do. All right. So we know that this guy, Sergeant Robert Bales, according to some reports anyway, had a head injury, sustained a head injury. And we also know that frequently what follows from that in the Army these days is that they start prescribing psychiatric medications, often because the patient experiences something that they interpret as, quote, depression. And we know what the effects of these drugs are. So I want you to just tell our audience here, and we're folks, this is an expert. What is happening in the military with the proliferation of psychiatric drugs, and what is the effect on the behavior of troops?
Well, I'm glad you're putting it in a broad context, because there are so many aspects of this case that would be just really important for your audience. First of all, there's no question that anybody who's had 4 deployments is suffering from what we call post-traumatic stress disorder. It's not really a disorder. He's suffering from the reaction of a normal person with a normal brain to horrific stress. There's just no way that after 4 deployments, he isn't emotionally compromised, because that's the natural response of the normal human being with a normal brain to these kinds of experiences. Just one deployment, let alone 4. So the whole idea of him having 4 deployments, I mean, we're abusing our soldiers with these multiple deployments, and we're setting them up for violence, for suicide, for lifelong reliving and re-experiencing of these traumas. So that's the first thing. The second thing is it does sound like he has traumatic brain injury. I do believe that something close to that language is used by the official reports. And when you have a traumatic brain injury, interestingly enough, John, it's almost impossible to distinguish it from what we're calling PTSD. Again, I don't think it's a disorder, PTSD. It's a natural reaction. But it's very hard to tell them apart. The person gets irritable and edgy and easily overstimulated. The person reacts with judgment, stresses, feels constantly beleaguered, has difficulty thinking in a normal, quick fashion. Judgment gets impaired.
And what happens when they jump in with the drugs, Peter?
Well, that adds to it, interestingly enough, because the drugs produce exactly the same thing. So if you are taking, and the odds are overwhelming, and I want to get into that if we can in some detail, what's going on in the service with drugs. But if you're taking an antidepressant, well, what are its common adverse effects? Overstimulation, anxiety, jumpiness, hostility, aggressiveness, and a long-term effect of just, you know, you're just not caring about what you do anymore. So we got antidepressants that he's probably been given at some time, almost with certainty at some time. We have the head injury. We've got the trauma of these repeated deployments.
And you've documented, Peter, you've documented time and time again that these antidepressants, the SSRI antidepressants like Zoloft and Paxil and Prozac, can and do cause incidents of suicide and homicide.
Oh, absolutely. I'm evaluating a military case right now of a homicide on antidepressants. Yeah, right this moment. I can't give you another word about it. But, yeah, I'm evaluating a case right now of that. And I've seen many in the civilian life as well. There's no doubt about it. And as you know, John, I testified before Congress about a year ago before the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. I was the key witness. I led off with a half an hour discussion of how these drugs overstimulate people and will drive them in the direction of violence. Suicide, there's another factor I want to add in, because we've got like about five factors beleaguering this individual. Another is that he's working at one of these outposts. And I've talked to people who've worked those outposts. I've talked to therapists who have been in them. And you've got this horrific problem, which is that you're tasked with relating to the civilian population, building schools, helping them out, you know, helping them with their wells or whatever other help we can provide.
And then you're supposed to turn around and kill people, right?
Well, that, but first, at night, they're turning against you. Because the very people you're working with are going to contain some of the Al-Qaeda, some of the enemy. And then, of course, yes, you're supposed to kill them. But under very, very limited rules of engagement that don't really allow for self-defense. So it's a bizarre situation. This guy, I mean, we're looking at four or five factors that would have been impinging on him. Now, can I talk a little more just about the drugs and what's going on in the military?
Yeah, and the way I'd like to have you kind of boil it down here is the increase, the incredible change that's taken place here with loading up of psychiatric drugs here in the military over the last, whatever, 10 years.
Well, it's a very good way to begin, John. It's bizarre. Before the Iraq War, soldiers did not go into combat on psychiatric drugs. They just didn't. Starting with the Iraq War, psychiatry and the psychopharmaceutical complex got this top-down power. My wife is the one that educated me, Ginger, about how psychiatry goes into situations where they can be right at the top and then spread on down. So they go into the military and they spread on down the drugs. So we have gone from a situation in which soldiers didn't go into combat on drugs before Iraq to where estimates of 20% or more of these young, mostly young men and women are carrying drugs into combat.
Yeah, that's the key. In other words, they can just self-dose themselves.
They are given up to 180 days to carry with them of mind-bending drugs like benzos and stimulants and even the antipsychotic Seroquel for sleep. 180 days. Now, you're 19, you're 20 years old. You've been told these things are good for stress. What are you going to do? You're going to
pop them
as prescribed. You're going to pop them. Exactly. You're going to trade them. You're going to not know even what you're taking some of the time.
Trading them. Yeah.
What else are you going to do?
This is complete chaos. I mean, you and I have talked over the years so much about the violent behavior, including, you know, at the time of the Columbine shootings, we were talking about these two young kids who were on Luvox, and I questioned you very closely on the potential effects of those drugs in mounting grandiose schemes that involve violence and so forth. And here we're talking about actually putting, you know, untold numbers of soldiers out on the battlefield, under battlefield conditions, under all this stress, with 180 days of these antidepressants and other psychiatric drugs that could cause them to just commit suicide, turn around and kill people, go into all kinds of bizarre behavior.
It's nuts, John. It's absolutely nuts. And it's so good that you're giving more, you know, more opportunity for people to learn about this. You were referring, I think, to Eric Harris and Columbine, and I know for a fact that Eric Harris, who was perhaps the leader of the two boys, was taking Luvox at the time of the shooting. And here, give you an idea, and we should address this, how the media is covering up all this. About a year ago, USA Today, less than a year ago, I think, did a review of Let's Relook at Columbine, and it said flatly, we now know that Eric Harris was taking Luvox at the time of the shooting. So I wrote to them, and I said, look, I have the official FDA documentation that he was at a, quote, it's so ironic, John, a therapeutic level of blue box of his blood on autopsy.
Wow.
And furthermore, I have the autopsy coroner's report saying the same thing.
And just so our listeners know, this is another one of these SSRI antidepressants, Luvox, that can indeed, like all of them, stimulate violence, homicide, suicide.
Absolutely. And the press, of course, USA Today did not respond to me at all.
What a big surprise that is, huh?
You know, they didn't want to change the lie. So much is the money and power. And then, John, why isn't anybody asking the question you're asking? You are the first media person to get in touch with me to ask the question about could he have been on psychiatric drugs. The odds are overwhelming that he was.
We got another story here, Peter, in San Diego, where I'm from, about this guy, Jason Russell, who was the director of the Invisible Children video that's gone viral, Kony 2012, and then ended up running around on the street naked and doing all kinds of crazy things and is now in psychiatric lockdown in San Diego. I don't know whether you know about this story, but, you know, okay, so there's a lot could be said on all different sides of this issue about the video. That's the point of this, though, is, you know, where does somebody suddenly do this? You know, people have now been trained, conditioned to accept this kind of thing. Oh, yeah, well, somebody walked into a school and shot up the school. Oh, yeah, well, somebody ran out on the street naked all of a sudden, never did anything like that in his life before. And so, again, the question has to be asked. I mean, was he under some kind of psychiatric care? Was he receiving any of these drugs? Did he find somebody who had one of these drugs and he just started taking it?
Well, that's right. I think the odds are when an adult in America today has what looks like a manic episode, there's something weird, bizarre, overstimulated, grandiose, like running around naked out of the blue, the odds are in America today it was caused by an antidepressant because they commonly cause that behavior, commonly cause it. Up to 20% of people on these drugs develop some kind of overstimulation. And, you know, the data shows maybe 5 to 15% are going to have something that looks like a manic episode in their lifetime on these drugs. Very, very high numbers. And
let's just look at this for a second, Peter. We've got these drugs, you know, all over the place. I mean, the numbers of prescriptions in the millions and millions and millions everywhere. And then we have these crazy incidents of murder and violent activity and bizarre behavior, you know, cropping up all over the country. And yet, the media becomes less and less able to or willing to even explore the possibility that any of these drugs are involved in any of these incidents. And I've been told that the police don't want to get involved in this, prosecutors don't want to get involved in this, judges even don't want to get involved in this. They don't want to touch this area. They want to stay away from it. Your reaction to that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I wrote with Ginger, talking back to Prozac in 1994, I was able to pull out, and she was able to pull out of the media, dozens and dozens of incidents of violence, suicide, mayhem, where the media pinpointed that the person was taking Prozac. And then
really?
Eli Lilly and the drug companies have just slammed the door, and the media now doesn't even want to ask. Literally, no one's called me to discuss it. You're the first one, God bless
right.
you, you know, to call me and
right.
say, you know, what could the drugs have been involved? And we don't know for sure, but what would they have done? And, you know, in his case, we almost know for sure. I'm getting calls now, John. This is going to blow you away. I'm getting calls now from soldiers who are being refused deployment because they won't take psychiatric drugs from the Army shrink.
Is that right?
That isn't turning the world on its head. That's how
Yeah, because it used to
is.
be I was going to say this to you, Peter. It used to be in the old days that if a kid wanted to go in the Army and he said that he'd been on Ritalin, for example, they wouldn't take him. So now what you're saying is, listen, we have this armament of drugs that we're going to pile on top of you, including, as you've documented, the most toxic of all, the antipsychotics. And if you won't take them, we won't let you into the Army.
But we won't let you go to war. Why don't you go to active duty deployment in Afghanistan if you won't take the drug?
If you won't take the drugs.
Yeah, I'm literally being consulted in cases like that. It's totally bizarre.
Unbelievable. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. I'm talking with Dr. Peter Bragan. His website is Bragan.com, Bregin.com. If you want to become educated in a way that will absolutely blow you into smithereens, go to his website, begin to explore his books, articles, and information.
Way up north,
to Alaska.
Way up north,
to Alaska.
This is John Rappaport back for Alex Jones, sitting in today for Alex on the Alex Jones Show, and we're talking with Dr. Peter Bragan. Peter, we have only a few minutes to go here until we end off at the top of the hour.
Our organizational meeting that's coming, we're having a national meeting coming up in a couple of weeks.
Very briefly, yes, please.
Yeah, well, it's just April 13th through 15th in Syracuse, New York. 3 days of great people talking about all of these issues, including better health service. You can get it on empathictherapy.org, or my website.
Empathictherapy.org. Yes, absolutely. Anything that Peter's associated with, folks, I can tell you is not only first class, but mind-blowing. Okay, so we now have a situation here in the last couple of minutes as we're talking, Peter, where the Army, the Air, you know, all the services are now, as you said, telling people, hey, if you want to go to war, you've got to take psychiatric drugs. And now the media is not reporting anymore at all on incidents of violence and suicide and so forth that may be or are connected to psychiatric drugs, because Eli Lilly and other companies have slammed the door. So the media are now in the pocket completely of the pharmaceutical industry on this, right?
Yes, it's much worse than it was 5 years ago or 10 or 15. The media is much, much less going to look at psychiatric drugs now. It's really a bad situation, and it's getting worse and worse. And we have 20% of women supposedly are taking antidepressants now. I mean, we're talking about huge figures. It's a national tragedy. And long-term, these drugs are very bad for people. I have a blog about this on Huffington Post. If you just go to Bregan on Huffington Post, go to my blog about long-term effects of antidepressants. It's a national tragedy, John, and you are so to be praised for doing this show.
Well, we want to cover this for, you know, as many people as we possibly can so they are aware of this, because the propaganda on this is, of course, pharmaceutical propaganda is always outstanding. I mean, they're going to tell you that this is just the greatest thing in the world and that only rarely do we have problems and so on and so forth. But what you've managed to point out, Peter, that is so important is that this is endemic. I mean, you're talking about long-term effects of these drugs in huge numbers in the population. You're talking about basically lies that have been told to sell these drugs, to present studies that appear to make them safe and effective, when all of this is just a sham.
Well, it's a total sham. I mean, the drugs are only tested for 4, 5, 6 weeks, by and large. So when your doctor says you need to take them for the rest of your life, he's making it up.
Wow. Did you hear that, folks? So the drugs, are done for 5, 6 weeks. The FDA approves them. Then the doctor tells the patient, you have to take the drug for the rest of your life. And this is science?
And
wow.
The FDA does not require, John, any studying of the adverse effects on the brain. There's no neuropsychological testing or MRIs on animals or on people. So they're just ignoring the fact that these psychoactive substances that are alien to the brain are going to have a negative impact on the brain.
Unbelievable. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. We have been privileged to grab a few minutes of valuable time from Dr. Peter Bregan. Again, his website is bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N. Thank you so much, Peter. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
John, you are the best. You are the best interviewer on this subject in the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Say hi to Ginger. Okay, folks. That is not the horse's mouth. That's the mouth of one of the most brilliant medical minds on the planet, Dr. Peter Bregan. We're going to a break now. Stay tuned at the top of the hour because we have a lot more to say about Robert Bales, the sergeant in Afghanistan, the Jason Russell story, and Invisible Children. This is John Rappaport on the Alex Jones Show.
This is GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds could become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true, seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank, and it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden. So visit them today at survivalseedbank.com. That's survivalseedbank.com, or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for SurvivalSeedBank.com.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCM Radio Network.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport in San Diego, sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. We're talking medical murder. We're talking medical cartel. We're talking about a globalist agenda to make you a patient in the system from cradle to grave and dose you with toxic pharmaceuticals, debilitate you and your children and the population all the way down the line to make you more malleable and easy to control. That's the agenda, folks, in a nutshell. What the medical system has done is taken the aspects of itself that produce good results. For example, emergency crisis trauma medicine. You know, you're lying on the street and you've been run over by a bus. Well, somebody comes along with a glass of, with herbs in it, as opposed to the guys, paramedics, and they want to take you to the hospital and they put you back together again, you're liable to say, let's go to the hospital, folks. But they parlay that, you see, into saying that everything medical is just as good as we can do in putting you back together after you've been run over on the street. Everything is just as good. Long-term treatment for chronic diseases and treatment for brain problems and cancer and heart disease and all of this and prevention and vaccines and so on and so forth. It's all just as good as we are good at putting you back together after you've been run down on the street. That's their angle. That's their play. That's their con game. That's their shell game. You just heard Dr. Peter Bregan, one of the brilliant lights in the field, talk about what's happening in the military now, where people, kids who want to go to war, are being told, you can't go to war unless you'll take the psychiatric drugs. The drugs that have been shown time and time again by Bregan and others to cause violent, erratic, suicidal, homicidal behavior. You want to see the relationship between Prozac and the other SSRI, antidepressants, Zoloft, Paxil, and so on, to violence and violent behavior and other long-term debilitating effects? There's material all over the place, and at Bregan.com you can find much of that. Okay. We're talking about Robert Bale, the sergeant who is now accused of killing 16 civilians in Afghanistan. You heard Dr. Bragan talking about the pileup of effects here, from PTSD to the fourth deployment. And also, he brought up a fantastic point about how, because he's handling some of these cases, Dr. Bragan, a soldier during the day is being used to go into a village and help reconstruct a village. And yet the soldier knows that at night, some of the same people in that village, he doesn't know who, are going to turn against him because they really are Taliban, and they're going to try to kill him. This is a way to fight a war? I mean, I'm laughing because what else are you going to do? I could scream. This is a way to fight a war? This is not a war. This is an operation to gain control of resources, as we are seeing with AFRICOM all over the world where America and other of its allies are intruding. This is about natural resources. It's about rare earth minerals. It's about oil pipelines. It's about domination of the populace. And under that heading, what has been left out of the equation, even in much alternative news, under the heading of debilitation of the population, is the ultimate agenda of the medical cartel. And I'm showing you here, step by step and degree by degree, and we've got a lot more to go, is that this is, in fact, debilitating and destructive to you, your children, and the population. John Rappaport here for Alex Jones. Don't go anywhere. We will be back.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
John Rappaport here, sitting in for Alex Jones today on the Alex Jones Show. Referring back to Dr. Bragan's comments about the dangerous effects, the violence-inducing effects, for example, of certain psychiatric drugs and how widespread they are in the society. You want to demoralize the society? You want to put people into a state of fear, confusion? You want to debilitate a society? You want to produce an operation like that that makes the society in the long run easier to take over by those elite forces who want to take it over? There's the formula. You plant seeds, folks. You plant seeds everywhere of these and other toxic drugs, some of which induce violence. And you stand back and you say, let it roll. Let it roll, boys. Let it roll. And you watch what happens. And things become more and more and more bizarre in that society. Weirdnesses pop up in the press of strange stories of people running naked out onto the street and killing other people unexplainably. What is all this about? Nobody knows. The press doesn't want to say. The press doesn't want to cover it. The press doesn't want to investigate. What I'm telling you is that's the formula. You put enough of these pharmaceutical drugs into a society, and that's what you will get, and that's what we are seeing. And here I will give you the proof right now, okay? Screw in your brains real tight on this one. Barbara Starfield, doctor, Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, the year 2000, the Journal of the American Medical Association. So far, the credentials are pristine. Mainstream conventional medicine, perfect credentials. July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association, Starfield writes a review called "Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World?" And in it, she concludes the following: that in the United States every year, the medical system kills 225,000 people. 119,000 of those in incidents and events related to hospitals, and 106,000 a year, like clockwork, deaths every year in the United States from FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs. Drugs approved by the FDA as safe and effective, killing 106,000 people in the U.S. like clockwork every year. And if you care to add that up, you will see it comes to more than a million Americans per decade killed by FDA-approved and certified pharmaceutical drugs. Okay? Chew on that. Chew on that. Chew on that. Perfect insider, mainstream, conventional, down the middle of the road credentials, the author, the medical journal, the publication, and that's the report in the year 2000. Every year, FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs kill 106,000 people in the United States. Not even talking about maiming, we're talking about killing. And the medical system on the whole kills 225,000 people a year. Like clockwork in the United States, that would be 2.25 million people a year. I mean, a decade? 2.25 million people a decade? You want to use the word Holocaust? You want to use the word genocide? Medical treatment is now the third leading cause of death in the United States behind heart disease and cancer, and has been at least since the year 2000 when this was published. I've been broadcasting this fact all over the world for the last, I don't know, 5 years. I interviewed Dr. Starfield, one of the last interviews she did before she died in 2011. I said to her, after you published your article in the year 2000 and cited those statistics, did anybody from the FDA ever contact you for assistance in trying to correct the situation? This was an email interview, and she wrote back, no, in capital letters, N-O. Anybody from the government get back to you and say, we need your help, we have to fix this? No. Are you aware of any efforts, remedial efforts, by the government? After all, it's the FDA, which is an executive agency of the federal government, that says these drugs are safe. Any effort that you know of by the government to fix this? No. No. Did your paper, when you published it in the Journal of the American Medical Association, receive any overwhelming criticism? No. It was given, in a sense, the silent treatment. There were stories in the media at the time, but they went away eventually. Starfield, over the years, continued to get at least, she said, one request a week for a copy of that paper. But the media were absolutely silent. And we'll get to the reasons why. Of course, we know all about advertising revenue from pharmaceutical companies. Yes, yes, yes. But there are deeper reasons for media silence on this. Because when you think about it, this is a gigantic story. Even just from the story point of view. I'm a reporter, okay? I know a story when I see it. You know a story when you see it. This drives me crazy. This drives me crazy. If the New York Times or the Washington Post or any other major U.S. paper that is, in fact, going down the toilet, and they are, wanted to resurrect their species on this planet, all they would have to do is climb on this story that I'm feeding you here right now. Over a million people per decade killed in the United States by FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs on an ongoing basis. You don't think that story could be run three or four times a day in print editions on newsstands with interviews, doctors coming out of the closet admitting, I knew, and I did nothing, and I feel so horrible now. And FDA people saying, I tried to warn the head of the FDA that this was happening. He wouldn't listen to me. I was sidelined. The president saying, I don't know anything about this. All manner of people emerging out of the woodwork. I can look into the future and see this story playing out in unbelievable ways over the next 3-4 years. You could pound on this sucker every day in a major newspaper like the Washington Post would make their Watergate investigation look like looking into theft in a candy store. Every day, new information, new things come out, new people talk, new doctors show up. And on top of this, you see, doctors are claiming, we don't know anything about this. Your medical doctor is saying, hey, I don't know anything about this. I can't believe this couldn't be true. As you sit there and say to your doctor, hey, by the way, Sam, I just want to let you know that there's a paper that was published on July 26, 2000, the Journal of American Medical Association by Dr. Barbara Starfield that stated in no uncertain terms that FDA-approved pharmaceuticals kill 106,000 people a year in the United States every year. Oh, that's ridiculous. If that were true, I would have heard about it. Yes. Really? Is that so? Is that really so? Are we willing to accept that excuse from doctors anymore? I don't know. Let's suppose that you were, I don't know, a cab driver in New York City, okay? Here's a good analogy for you. We're getting down to it, folks. 106,000 people a year killed in the United States every year by FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs, and a total of 225,000 from all effects of the medical system. Third leading cause of death in the United States, not being explored by the media. You want to know what pharmaceutical and medical warfare staged by the cartel against the global population is all about? And we're not even talking about debilitation or maiming or mutilation here. We're talking about DEATH death. And I'm citing the authoritative paper on the subject, okay? It's warfare against the population to destroy and debilitate the society to make it more controllable and easy for takeover. And there are people at the top of the medical cartel who know very well what they are doing. Everybody else is playing along for whatever their reasons. And if anybody comes up to you and says, well, you can't have a conspiracy unless you would have thousands and thousands of people let know about it. Baloney. Everybody plays his part for his own reasons. That's how you get a conspiracy. Only a few people really have to understand and know. Of course, there has to be a lot of lying that goes on, and I'll be talking to you about more of that later. But anyway, you're driving a cab in New York City, and a guy gets into your cab and says, take me uptown to Times Square. And he says, by the way, have you heard about the cabbie down in the village that mowed down 6 people this morning? You say, gee, no, I haven't. You really? And he said, not only that, but up in the Bronx, there was a cabbie that drove his car with 3 passengers out of some kind of a parking garage 16 stories down to the street. And there was another cabbie over in Staten Island who started shooting people. And this all happened when? And you say you're the cabbie this morning. This morning? Yeah, this morning. Why don't you know, Mr. Cabbie? We'll find out the answer to that question and what it has to do with medical death in America when we come back. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on The Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on The Alex Jones Show. Before we went to break, I was just talking about a story which I'll telescope here. If you were a cabbie in New York City and you suddenly learned that there were cabbies all around you committing violence, you would be aware of it. People would let you know, even if it wasn't in the newspapers. And so if you say that doctors don't really know that the medical profession via pharmaceuticals is killing 106,000 Americans a year, they don't know, they're not aware of it, they're entirely innocent. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Okay, we've got more on that later on. But Sweden is in the news, folks, because guess what they're doing? They're going to eliminate cash. Isn't that wonderful? They're moving into a cashless society. Apparently, they've been ruthlessly getting off of cash for years and years. I think they're down to about 3% of all transactions now involve cash. And now they're saying, hey, let's eliminate it altogether. Why? Cost of printing. Oh, yeah, gee. And people scratch their heads and they say, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Because a society should, first of all, think about the cost of printing. This is the most important thing in the universe, is the cost of printing money. And if we can eliminate that, it doesn't really matter what we do, right? This is the way they're presenting this, completely absurd, right? And the other thing is, we'll eliminate bank robberies and cash robberies. Oh, yeah, sure you will. Absolutely, because there'll be no cash around. But at the same time, the cybercrime rate will skyrocket. So this is a completely bogus cover story. What they're moving toward is a cashless society for one reason, so that the government and the forces of supernational government, globalism, can control money and control your money. They know what you spend, everywhere you go, what you do, where it goes. Ha, ha, ha. They've got you. They've got you. That's what a cashless society is all about. That's why Sweden is in the forefront of this, because they're basically saying to the world, you're going to catch up to us soon. We're in the vanguard. This is progressive. This is wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful if you want the government to be able to say that you spent 3 cents in Dubuque, Iowa on New Year's Eve, and they got it tracked exactly, because that is, in fact, what is going to happen. And I'm not being paranoid, I'm being very factual. That's what the system is for. Now, speaking of prices, of course, gas prices are going up through the roof, which is exactly what Obama wants. Oh, did I say that? Because he said, why would I even think of running to be elected if at the same time I were forcing up gas prices? That's ridiculous. No, afraid not. Ever since the Arab Spring broke out in Egypt, I've been writing and telling people, you know, folks, this has a lot to do with the price of oil. Don't forget that. This has a lot to do with the price of oil. For everything else that it has to do with, including domination of resources and people and so on by globalist invading troops and terrorists, thugs, it has to do with the price of oil. In raising the price of oil. Because the price of oil is dependent upon, quote, perception about oil, which in turn is regulated by what media says about perception about oil. Yeah, it's that insane. Oh, yes, the price of oil is going up again today because, obviously, of the turmoil in the Middle East. I saw these headlines on and on and on. What turmoil? No straits or canals were being threatened. Nothing was happening. But there was enough of an appearance, you see, of turmoil to start the ball rolling. And that happened in Egypt, and it's been going on ever since. And now we have the threats. We'll cut off the canal. We'll do this. And the price keeps on rising. And why is this part of Obama's agenda, which is to say simply the globalist agenda? Because Obama, Bush, whoever, Clinton, doesn't matter. This is the globalist agenda because, of course, we can move into Greenville and Green City. We can now say, well, guess what? We've got all kinds of alternative energies now, like windmills that we can set up everywhere that are suddenly cost effective, because now that it costs $10 to buy a gallon of gas at the pump, well, you could blow through a tube in your house and produce energy that would be useful because it costs $10 a gallon at the pump. This green agenda includes cap and trade, includes all of this that is going to destroy industry worldwide. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. We'll be back with more on this after the break.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the Infowars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. And very happy to have Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, with us now, who's going to preview what he's going to talk about in the next hour. Mike Adams of Natural News. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello, John. Thanks for having me on. Great to be on with you today. You're doing an awesome job, by the way. I love what you're covering, and I hope to chat with you more. Coming up here on the Alex Jones Show at the top of the next hour, we're going to be going over the linguistic breakdown of the deceptions behind Obama's executive order, the National Defense Resources Preparedness Executive Order. We'll be breaking down the language to show you exactly what it means between the lines, behind the scenes. So despite what they're saying publicly, we want you to understand what it really means underneath all that, behind the curtain, so to speak. Also, we've got some breaking news about the Rawsome Foods raid and the legal persecution of James Stewart. We've got an inside update coming up that I'll share with you. It's brief. It's not a huge breaking story yet, but it is some detail that you'll want to hear about. We've got all of that, plus a discussion between myself and John Rappaport, who's hosting today, at the top of the next hour. So stay with us. We've got all that coming up here on the Alex Jones Show. Back to you, John.
Thanks very much, Mike. We'll see you in the next hour.
Sounds good.
Mike is a great guy and a great pioneer for the 21st century in the issue of health freedom. We're talking about gas prices in the last segment. When the gas prices get high enough, all sorts of things become economically viable. You know, you can have bizarre contraptions that would not be cost-effective, you know, in any sane society, and all of a sudden, hey, we got $12 gas. All sorts of things work. But the real danger, of course, is what they're calling cap and trade. This is the idea that coming in behind gas prices, the globalists can initiate a fake, I underline that, green objective to limit industrial production on the planet to such a degree that it drives people out of business all over the place and bankrupts companies. And then the elite corporations, mind you, stay out of it. They are fine because they can trade and buy pollution credits under whatever name they're listed. They get exemptions. They get waivers, as we've seen with Obamacare. They get all kinds of exclusions that allow them to keep on doing exactly what they're doing under the guise of these treaty agreements like NAFTA and CAFTA, World Trade Organization. They roam the planet at will, destroy whatever is in their path. They can bring in intelligence services, and they do. And they can bring in troops, and they do. They can bring in all kinds of forward deployment in order to make their conquest of populations that we're seeing now throughout the Middle East and in Africa work for them, because they want the resources. They want the rare earth minerals that China is now saying, hey, we're going to hold back on shipping rare earth minerals. That makes it even more urgent to go into Africa under the guise of humanitarian aid. We're here to help you. Yes, it's medical care. It's this rebuilding. We care. We're concerned. We want to give you a glass of water, a shot of a vaccine, whatever, to make it look good, but under the surface, it's all about conquest. Mega corporate, mega globalist conquest on the continent of Africa, on any continent that has the resources. And the labor, not so important to the globalists. Not so important. It's mainly, we want the land, we want the resources. That's the way it works. Hope you understand that. Hope you really get the picture of how this operates. Because can you think of anything more ridiculous than a man in a white coat with a lot of drugs and medicines getting off a plane somewhere in Africa as if he's a hero and going into a village saying, going to save all of you people. Yeah, save us from what? With what? Well, with my medicines and my vaccines. Really? Is that right? Well, let me tell you something, folks, just between you and me, okay? Just between you and me. What's been killing Africa and every poverty-stricken area of the world since the beginning of time is contaminated water supplies, starvation generation to generation, overcrowding, lack of basic sanitation. You want to learn something about the history of health and medicine in the West? That's what you learn. When you eliminate those for real, forget the medicines and the vaccines. When you eliminate those, you bring about a state of health. Then you show you care. Then you are concerned. Then you are contributing something to welfare of people. That's not what's happening in Africa. Not what's happening in Latin America. It's not what's happening anywhere in the world, in any poor country. Because why? Because if you maintain dirty, contaminated water and overcrowding and lack of sanitation and so on, what do you get? You get debilitation, you get weakness, and you get death. Easier to control, easier to control. It's all part of the operation, folks. There's the military aspect of the operation of going in there and securing the resources through some phony war that's staged between two sides. And there's the medical aspect, and you better believe it. And if you don't understand the importance of the medical aspect, you're not clued in. You don't really have a clue. Okay, Obama has been making all kinds of declarations recently, and Mike and I are going to discuss that in the hour upcoming. But there are some things to say about this. Executive order updated. Yes, we know that Bush issued a very similar order. This is only making a few changes, and Clinton did, and so forth. Okay. But it's a basic reiteration of the power of the president, which means the ruling authority to whom the president owes his allegiance, to basically control all of the resources of the country and destroy the country. We can arrest you. We can kill you if we decide that you're a combatant. That's already been established. And in this executive order, what is completely blurred over most recent executive order is the difference between peace and war, you see. Because emergency measures that were announced in the executive order had to do with things like, oh, we can take over industries for military production and so on and so forth, running through the entire society, what can be taken over by the government. We saw some of this in World War II. But now it's blurred over as to what the difference is between war and peace. What are we talking about here? Doesn't matter. Government can move in at any time and take this over. Absolutely. How do you like that? And as we move up the line into the future, this article, by the way, several articles on this at Infowars.com, so you need to read those. As we move up the line into the future, which one of these articles points out, we're going to see more and more of this encroachment. You know, are we saying that tomorrow Obama is suddenly going to say, guess what, the entire transport industry of the United States is under control of the military, which is under my control? We're not saying that. This is the door is opening to this operation, which can move very quickly if a situation is provoked. Make no mistake about that. How about a phony epidemic? Boom. Now we got to take over. Okay, we're going to make a ring around this city. Yeah, we're going to quarantine Cincinnati. How about that? And the government is going to take over all aspects of business and industry that has any bearing on this city because we can, because we have this recent executive order. That's what we're talking about. All of this rolls up over time. It becomes more and more intrusive, invasive, and destructive. That's what this is about. While you're being distracted by all kinds of stories, this is what's happening. This is what's happening behind the scenes. Okay. So I gave you the stats on medical death in the United States. I could hammer that for the next 6 hours if I were on here, really. I mean, you know, they have to put me in restraints so I don't do that, because this is what people don't understand. But what lies up the road for you in this health insurance, national health insurance mandatory scheme, if it remains, is that you will be forced to take many of these drugs that kill people at this alarming rate in America every year. I mean, that's the bottom line as far as you and your family is concerned. Do you understand what I'm saying there? I mean, I hope you do. I hope you do. I hope you really do. Right? And then, of course, there's a question. Well, wait, doesn't the FDA certify all new drugs as safe and effective? How could they allow these drugs that are killing people at the rate of 106,000 a year in the United States to enter into the mainstream and be prescribed by doctors? Because they're responsible for certifying these drugs as safe and effective. Well, there's a thing called faking medical reality, okay, which is connected with published studies on the safety and effectiveness of the drugs, and we'll be getting into how that reality is faked to make it look as if these drugs are safe and effective when actually they're maiming and killing people. I mean, maybe you don't think this is important. I think this is one of the most important things in the world. It's political, don't you see? It's political. It's not medical. It's not medical. You kill one person with a drug, 1,000 people, 100,000 people, that's political. And you better get used to understanding that. That's crossing the line from medical to political. That's murder. That's an operation, an ongoing operation to debilitate and destroy families, communities, people's lives, their children's lives in this country. That's what that is. Okay. I guess you understand that. I hope you do. I really do. I want to read you a quote here. This is from a woman named Marcia Angel, or Angle, MD, who was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the most prestigious medical journal in the world. Okay, she was the boss over there for 2 decades. And this is what she writes. It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my 2 decades as an editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published. She means in her own journal, in other journals, mainstream, the most influential journals that dictate to the press what the press and media say about medicine and the effect of medicine on life in this country. It is no longer possible to believe the research that is published. This means research on drugs, new drugs, folks, on the drugs that these drug companies want to foist upon you. The research that they do that is printed in these journals that the FDA looks at, that turns out to be fake research. That's what she's saying. It's no longer possible to believe it because it's faked. I'll describe a little of that as we go on here. Okay, back to politics. What's happening in breaking news these days in the country? We have a race to the top, the horse race to the White House, right? We have the Republicans, we have the Demos, we have no independents this time around that anybody can observe with a microscope. We have these people arguing among themselves and self-destructing and so on. Anyone speaking about any of this material that we're covering here today? No. Not that I'm aware of. Ron Paul, who's a doctor, may be speaking about some of it. Instead, what they're talking about is, I'm tough. No, I'm tougher. No, I'll be even tougher if you elect me. This is all mind control, folks. This is all about image making on all sides, Democrats, Republicans. Who can put up the image that is going to click the counter in the brain of people and force them to go to the polls and say, this is the guy that I want? I mean, talk about current news. Have you been watching the debates as they play out over the last several months? It's all about operant conditioning, to condition citizens of this country who are voting into how to look at the faces that appear on the screen. Is it going to be a positive react or negative react? If the candidate says this in a certain kind of way, is it going to create a positive effect or a negative effect? And how about the makeup? And how about the suit? And how about the tie? And what is the message that you've got to get across tonight? His advisors around him, that you're tough, that you're tougher, that you're tougher than tougher than tougher, or that you're kinder and gentler, or that, in fact, you're wiser, politically speaking. Or you've got to give the impression, Governor, that you're the front runner, because you are. And so you've got to be a little bit more casual. You can't be as, you know, hyped up. Let the other guys be hyped up, because you're standing back there and you're winning, you see. And all of this is going on and on and on and on and on. And then the television gets into the act, and the image is made. And the image hits the eye and hits the brain. And there are researchers and think tanks all over America, political researchers and so on, and consultants who are looking at this material. And the country is going down the toilet. The country is going down the toilet while this PR bizarro goes on. Because nobody is willing to blow the whistle. Blow the whistle on what? Suppose Obama stood up tomorrow and said, I've got the notes here somewhere to prove it, but I think I remember the figures, yes. 11% of members of the Trilateral Commission were appointed by Obama to his administration. 11% of the American membership of the Trilateral Commission were appointed by Obama within, what, 10 days of his being elected and saying that he was independent? This is a different administration. This is a revolution. This is hope and change. We're not going to do government the same way. 87 members of the Trilateral Commission exist in the United States, and 11% were appointed by Obama. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. We'll be back after the break. Don't go anywhere. Report back, sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. You can look at my website, nomorefakenews.com, for some of these stories I'm talking about here and other material. We're talking about the Trilateral Commission, which is one of the elite organizations on the planet. Many of you know about it, formed in 1973 by David Rockefeller, basically, to bring together Western Europe, U.S., and Japan, now has expanded. The statement was to create a new international economic order. That was the founding statement. Now, here we are in the middle of, you know, presidential campaign. Obama has not swung into gear yet, but he is connected because he's appointed 11 of the 87 trilateral members in the United States to posts in his administration. That's pretty incredible. There's only 87 members of this commission, which is a completely globalist force, okay, designed to eliminate national sovereignty and borders, to change the nature of money, talk about the cashless society, to control governments internationally. And he's got 11 of these guys out of 87 members in the country in his administration: Tim Geithner, Secretary of Treasury, National Security Advisor, General James Jones, Chairman of the Economic Recovery Committee, Paul Volcker, Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this needs to be covered. I mean, kidding? Needs to be covered. Absolutely needs to be covered, because that's why no candidate is going to step up during this campaign and say, I oppose globalism. I want to end the super international control of America or of any nation, because that control involves destruction of the people, co-option of the resources of the country, and enslaving the population over a long-term basis, and allowing mega corporations to run free and roam the planet to be exempt from any of this until they become the only existing centers of, quote, light in the darkness where anybody can find help. Strange kind of help, eh? In a society that is going increasingly down the tubes, poverty-stricken, because those are easier to control. No candidate is going to step up and say that, because in those terms, I mean, candidate with a significant chance of winning who is a front-runner potential in their party is going to dare to say that. Certainly not in these terms, because that's blowing the whistle on his own masters, and that's what we've got to get straight here. It doesn't matter which way we go. Cashless society in Sweden, that's an operation. That's not just Sweden deciding, oh, we'd like to go cashless. No, that's, look, world, we can make it work, and so can you. And now you can be completely watched and tracked and surveyed, and you will be under the loving eye and massaging hand of globalism throughout society. We will track where you go. We'll know what you buy, every penny. If you try to hide anything from us, God forbid, we'll know. We'll bring it to your attention, and we'll take the money out of your account and put it where it should be. You know, we're money managers. That's what we're doing, folks. We're going to manage your money for the rest of your life, right? That's where we're heading with this. People like the Trilateral Commission want to create a new international economic order. Well, that's where we are. This is John Rappaport. What about the CIA spying on you through your refrigerator? We'll get to that right after the break.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, folks. This is Alex Jones. I'm looking for people that have the wisdom to spot savings, opportunity, and recognize risk. Saving means to make money. The Cowbin Pure Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated and twice as good as what you're using now. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils that contain no useless dyes, perfumes, deodorants, or antibacterials. Your risk is the hundreds of hazardous toxic detergents that give you rashes, itching sores, and deteriorating clothing called lint. If you want something better, if you want something you've never had before, you have to do something you've never done before. Getting a free catalog is easy by calling 800-340-7091 or see Calvin on the web at 5starsoap.com. Take charge of your health now by calling 800-340-7091 or see Calvin on the web at 5starsoap.com.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCM Radio Network. Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones and the Alex Jones Show. We're in the third hour here. And we're going to bring in Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com, who is leading, I mean, in an incredibly great way, I got to say, with much admiration, breaking stories, the issue of health freedom, political freedom. Wherever there is something important to be dug up, Mike is there. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi there, John. Thanks for having me back on. We've got a lot coming up this hour. And I got to say, you know, look, we are all just info warriors, really, if you think about it. It's people like you and I. It's Alex Jones, the tip of the spear. We're all fighting for truth, for justice, for real liberty out there. I mean, it's just what we do. And I kind of agree with Alex. We don't want to be patted on the back for it. We just want people to wake up and take action on what we're talking about. So with that said, let's move right into the issue.
Are you cool, John? I wanted to just finish up this little piece that I was talking about, the CIA spying on people now through smart appliances in their homes, where toasters and refrigerators and stoves and ovens and so on are going to be connected up to the internet in a way that will allow you to be spied on in your homes. I mean, it's completely insane. I don't think we need to get into that. But the thing that interested me in the story was that Petraeus, who is, you know, head of the CIA, was talking about this at a conference of InQtel. InQtel is an investment company, actually illegal investment company, owned by the CIA. What's the government doing in owning companies? But anyway, it owns InQtel, and they finance all sorts of companies, like IT companies in Silicon Valley, to come up with new developments that the CIA then can use. And InQtel is coming up with these smart appliances. Well, a guy named Buzzy Krongard was instrumental for creating InQtel, along with George Tenet of the CIA. And Buzzy Krongard was, in fact, the head of Alex Brown, one of the biggest investment banker houses in the country, that was discovered in a San Francisco Chronicle article to have been one of those outfits that was trading stock precipitously in American Airlines just before 9/11. So that's following something down the rabbit hole. Just thought you might want to know. So, Mike, let's jump in and give us your top issue of the day.
Well, hey, these, you know, commenting on what you just said there, these ties are always very deep on every issue. Look at the TSA. Look who's making money from the selling of the naked body scanners. You know, follow the money. Who benefits from the propaganda? Who benefits from the deception? It's always these people in power, sort of buddies of the White House, regardless of who's in the White House, whether it's Bush or Obama or Clinton or whoever. I mean, look at the failure of the green solar companies. These are people who were buddies of Obama, who took hundreds of millions of dollars in government grant money, paid themselves huge fat salaries as CEOs, never produced a product, never produced a service, and then went bankrupt. It's just another form of government theft. It's just like John Corzine. It's just like the bankster bailouts of Goldman Sachs. It's just theft at every single level. And the one thing all these thefts have in common is they're all close buddies with the White House.
Indeed, they are. And organizations like the Trilateral Commission and, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations, headquartered in New York, created in 1920. These are a couple of the elite crony, buddy-buddy, nudge-nudge, wink-wink, old boys clubs where all of this theft is planned and takes place. And interestingly, both of these organizations, Trilateral Commission and CFR, go back to the Rockefeller monopoly.
And at the same time that all of these thefts are taking place, the regular people, the people working for a living who are breaking their backs to try to get ahead, their money keeps getting stolen from them, and they're prosecuted for crimes like selling raw milk. So there's this two-tiered system where regular everyday people can't get ahead. They're criminalized for everything, where meanwhile the real criminals in Washington run free and steal everything.
We got to go to a break. We're going to cover this, Rossum, right after this.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
John Rappaport in for Alex Jones today on the Alex Jones Show with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Okay, Mike, the Rossum story. This is, we were talking before the break, a perfect illustration of how the little guy gets screwed. The hardworking person who's trying to do something good for himself, his family, and other people is getting completely demolished. So go for it.
We've got a lot of inside information here. Let me brief you all on the latest. We thought we might have James Stewart. He's the operator of Rawsome Foods in California, who was raided and arrested at gunpoint last year. We thought we might have him on today, but it turns out he's not available because the Ventura County has him in a three-day preliminary hearing. It's just a preliminary hearing, but it's taking 3 days. He's being persecuted, charged with 38 felony counts of financial crimes that we have investigated, and it turns out he factually has nothing to do whatsoever with these so-called financial crimes. And if you look at the financial crimes, what are they? Well, Ventura County claims that Sharon Palmer, the owner of Healthy Family Farms, or the original owner, I should say, there are other owners involved, she was unable to repay investors on time because she was paying fines to the county and she was paying literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees because the county was raiding the farm and throwing her in jail. So the county came in, put her behind schedule on paying back the investors, and then they charged her with felony crimes of defrauding the investors because she was late repaying them, which the county caused.
Wow.
So here's a case of the state putting you in a position that then they call criminality and then charging you with 38 felony crimes. Now, compare this, John, with what has happened to John Corzine of MF Global, who stole billions of dollars from farmers all across America who had invested in that fund to try to reduce their risk as they grow crops. You know, farmers invest in crop futures to reduce their risk of crop failures and so on. And nothing has happened to him. No prosecutions,
and they can't find
no
the
indictments,
money. We don't
no
know where
cases.
The money is. We just don't know where the money is, right?
Yeah, we don't know where the money is. I apologize. I have a little bit of difficulty hearing you come in when I'm talking. But it's a case of selective prosecution and selective criminalization of individual farmers while the big, rich, fat cats get away with massive theft once again.
Now, James Stewart of Rawsome, I mean, this is just an incredible story to me. The guy is selling raw milk. His customers are happy. They love the milk. He keeps selling them the milk. All of a sudden, he gets raided. Now, from what you're saying, is it true that they're not now charging him with selling raw milk or contaminated milk, that all of these charges are, quote, about financial crimes?
It is both, John. They're still charging him with, quote, selling unpasteurized milk, which he wasn't even doing. He actually didn't even run a retail store. It was a private buyer's club, a co-op. Everybody was a partial owner of a cow and of a farm, and they were merely picking up the milk they already owned. It's basic contract law under common law. But California has attacked that and said that that's not valid under their state laws. But now they've added on the financial crimes on top of that. And remember, Ventura County arrested him when he was in court a couple of weeks ago, and then they tortured him in the L.A. County prison, the L.A. County jail. It's called, I believe the name of this jail, believe it or not, is called Twin Towers.
That's the nickname for it in downtown L.A. I've been there.
Downtown L.A. And they subjected him to starvation, to hypothermia. They shackled him with chains 3 or 4 times around his waist. They subjected him to medical procedures without his permission. And he nearly died of hypothermia, shivering in isolation in a cell. And he was lost in the system for 8 days. This is the way they treat farmers in America today. This is what's happening to James Stewart. We've documented it, and more on this is coming out. And we will be sharing that documentation with Kurt Nemo, Alex Jones, Paul Joseph Watson, and the whole team there at InfoWars.
Yeah, I'm looking for stories to keep on showing up on this. And, you know, the other thing, of course, that James said was that in the final hours at the LA County Jail, somebody in that cell block, that area, released horrendous sewage that came flooding into the cells, an inch or two deep on the floors in the cells, that contained feces and other horrendous material. And his shirt was there. I mean, he was already freezing, and he was given a filthy mop and told, to clean it up himself.
Yes.
I mean, this is just unbelievable.
Well, think about the irony, the sick, almost pathetic, devilish irony of all this. The state is charging him with crimes for selling milk with living bacteria, which we call probiotics. It's good for you. But the state says it's unsanitary. Therefore, you're a criminal. And what do? They throw him in a jail where they flood his jail cell with raw sewage, which, of course, is heavily contaminated with dangerous and deadly pathogens. And they say, this is justice. This is what the state says. And they did make him clean out his own cell of raw sewage by hand. They actually gave him a small squeegee. And then after he had squeegeed out the raw sewage out of his jail cell, they then left him in that cell for another 30 plus hours. And I also confirmed this story with a former LA cop. I don't want to release his name yet, but he confirmed with me that this is not only happening, that this is not only a true story, but that this is routine in the LA jail system, John.
I agree. It's routine. James mentioned the other day that he was at a conference where he was able to talk to a few sheriffs from different parts of the country. And he told them that he lived in LA, told him this, what had happened to him, and basically one sheriff just said, move.
Yeah.
Move.
I'm telling the same thing, actually.
Yeah. This happens. This happens in L.A. This is not just James, but we have to keep in mind that, you know, James was a guy who was arrested for selling healthy milk. Really, I mean, that was why he was arrested. That was why he was raided. That was the genesis of the whole thing. And so this is what he's subjected to. And you're right, it's perfect. It's like saying, okay, so you claim to have milk that's free of contamination with all these organisms, so we're now going to flood you with the most contaminated organisms we can find.
Yeah, and think that's about right. How much bail was set in this case, by the way, John. Ventura County slapped him with $1 million in bail, and they slapped Sharon Palmer with $2 million in bail. Now look at how this is selectively applied. Look at the case of the Penn State assistant coaches there who were reportedly involved in child rape and pimping out children for sex favors to, you know, wealthy clients in that area. Complete sicko type of perverted behavior. He got off on, I think, $100,000 bail with no, he didn't even have to back it up with any kind of assets. So an unsecured bail, whereas James Stewart, the milkman, gets $1 million in bail, which is more than you even see for murderers and rapists. So it's very clear that California is really selectively persecuting this individual for their own political reasons, which we could probably get into on a later show.
Yeah, absolutely. So give us your take on these Obama initiatives that have been coming down the pipeline so rapidly of late, and what they spell for America.
Well, I'm going to help our listeners here parse this information. The executive order is called the National Defense Resources Preparedness Order. It was issued on March 16th. Paul Joseph Watson and Alex Jones have covered it, especially on the show yesterday, but there's more to it. We posted a story on this on Natural News last night. It's gone very viral, 10,000 shares on that just this morning. But some people were asking, well, wait a minute. The federal government hasn't seized all the farms and all the food and all the fertilizers. No, they have seized control. They have asserted authority and control over all of these resources. The actual physical seizure will come at a later date. But this executive order does assert control. And I want to explain how that works by parsing the language of this executive order so that everybody understands it. If you look at Section 201 under Part 2, Priorities and Allocations, this word allocations is crucial to understand because it says that this order is designed to, quote, allocate materials, services, and facilities as deemed necessary or appropriate to promote the national defense. And that could mean anything. But if you look at the word allocation, how do you allocate something if you don't have it? So in order for the government to allocate something, it must first confiscate it, John. And that brings me to my first slide right here. Allocation is confiscation. Can you see that? For those of you watching on PrisonPlanet.tv, allocation is confiscation. So wherever in this order that you read the word allocation, you must first assume confiscation takes place, and then once the government has those resources, food, tractors, livestock, energy, water, labor, metals, you name it, then they reallocate it based on their priorities. And we'll talk about their priorities as we continue this, John.
Well, that's an important point you're making, very important, Mike, as you're saying. How are you going to allocate something unless it's already under your control, which essentially means you own it because you can do whatever you want with it? So this idea, you know, they like to use this word allocation. It sort of gives you the sense of, oh, we know what we're doing and we're planning and we're putting some over here and putting some over there, all in the best interest, of course, of you, the people. That's all we have in mind, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really a centrally planned economy. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It is really a communist-style takeover of all private property across America. And when they get into food, specifically in this executive order, they named food, farms, fertilizer, livestock, tractors, all of this food production equipment. And then in another section, they define what is a food resource. And here it is, quote, right from the WhiteHouse.gov document. Food resources means all commodities and products or complements to such commodities or products that are capable of being ingested by either human beings or animals. That's
hold
everything.
On, Mike. Hold that thought. We got to go to a break here. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. This is John Rappaport back sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. We're rounding the far turn. We're coming into the last half hour plus here with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. And Mike, you were talking about being able to understand the language in these executive orders and, you know, pronouncements from the White House and how this is shaping what really is happening in America. So please continue. This is fascinating.
Yeah, we're going through the language and the definitions so that everybody really understands just what a big power grab this is, this executive order that was issued by President Obama just a few days ago. We covered the food resources definition before the break there. There's one more sentence that's important there, because in this order it states, and again, this is posted on WhiteHouse.gov. This isn't some made-up thing. This is right there out in the open. As Alex said, it's hidden in plain view. The words say, quote, food resources also means potable water packaged in commercially marketable containers, all starches, sugars, vegetable and animal or marine fats and oils, seeds, cotton, hemp, and flax fiber.
Wow.
Federal government.
Okay, we lost Mike there for a second. He was about to say the incredible extent here, I think he mentioned even hemp, of control by the government over all of these resources. When they say food, they mean anything that you could possibly ingest or could be considered a food or supports food industry. Allocation becomes absolute control. And that's what's happening here. We're going to try to bring Mike back, but we're going to continue in the meantime. Oh, Mike, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. It's a little glitchy today. Continuing with energy, this executive order also claims total control over all forms of energy in the country, including solid fuels, petroleum, gas, coal, solar, and wind. So everybody out there who has a solar system, you think you own it. No, you don't. The federal government owns it. Obama just seized control or asserted control over your solar system, meaning the federal government could come take it at any time if they deem it's necessary for any kind of a national emergency or national defense. And again, that could be from anything. It could be something they make up. They could post something on a message board somewhere and say a terrorist has threatened to, for example, blow up a train station. They could use that as the trigger to say, let's confiscate all power. There goes your solar system. It's not an exaggeration.
You know, yeah, Alex and Paul Watson pointed out a very good distinction, too, in this latest executive order of Obama's, which is there's no difference really between war emergency and peacetime. That this, you know, allocation, this control, the seizing of everything could take place in either case. We don't have to be at war. It doesn't really matter. It's, as you say, It could be an incident provoked by the powers that be. It could be, you know, a whim. It could be anything. It's just like Obama saying, well, I'm not going to kill anybody, but I have a right to order anybody who's an American citizen be killed. But of course, I wouldn't do it. And then you say, well, why did you pass the law in the first place? You know, well, we had to or something. It's the law. Once it's an order or it's the law, there are people that are going to stand up and salute this. And that's the important thing.
Let's get to stockpiling. Here's another slide. Stockpiling. When the government's stockpiling, that's good. When people are stockpiling, that's bad. So there's another selective system of logic for stockpiling. And in this executive order, it says specifically, Section 202A, it says that the Secretary of Defense oversees the military use of civil transportation stockpiles managed by the Department of Defense and directly related activities. And then it goes in to talk about materials acquired under this executive order. If in the judgment of the Secretary of Defense, isn't that the man who just said the UN runs our nation, as the National Defense Stockpile Manager. So do you understand this? The resources across the country are being grabbed and then controlled by a man who says Congress is essentially null and void and the UN makes the decisions for us. So how does that serve America's interests? You tell me.
Panetta recently, of course, said that there was no way that war was going to be declared aggressively by the United States without UN approval, which raised about 20 eyebrows in Washington and millions of eyebrows around the country. Absolutely incredible. And also here, what we're talking about is suggesting at this time, at this crucial time, during a presidential campaign, during an economic deep, deep, deep recession, that we're going to call this wartime, emergency time, control time from above. We're coming down to another break here. This is John Rappaport with Mike Adams, who has a lot more for us on the language of the Obama resolutions and pronouncements. Sitting in here for Alex Jones today on The Alex Jones Show. We'll be right back.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. And Mike, continue to explore the language that's hidden in these Obama declarations about natural resources.
Sure. Well, one of the most often used strategies of tyrants is to pass laws and regulations that are sufficiently vague to allow them to interpret it in any way they want down the road. And then they can claim, well, that's the law. Just like Hitler said, well, that's the law. You know, we're gonna kill all these Jewish prisoners, or we're gonna invade these countries, and that's the law. Well, as Alex often mentions, just because it's the law doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it just. It doesn't make it moral or ethical. So we have all these violations of law going on, and they're all being, quote, made official by words on a piece of paper that really don't mean anything. And one of the key concepts in this executive order is this one, the continuity of government, but never the continuity of liberty. Now think about this. If you look at the language of this act, this order, everything about it, and most of what the federal government talks about today is protecting the continuity of government, protecting government with stockpiles of weapons, ammo, communications, food, water, medical gear in caves, you know, all across the country. Well, at least in certain strategic areas, I should say. But there's never talk about the continuity of liberty. There's never talk about how do we protect the people. There's never talk about maybe the people should stockpile something. In fact, it's the opposite, John. They say that when people stockpile supplies, they might be terrorists. So wait a minute.
This is fantastic, Mike, that you brought this up, this distinction between different views of stockpile. You know, I mean, because I'm a reporter, I can suddenly whisk back through hundreds of stories that I've read in my life. so-and-so was arrested and accused of stockpiling, right?
Right.
Stockpiling this or that. Oh, we got to watch out for this guy. He's stockpiling food. Can you believe it? In his cellar, he's got like 6 months' worth of food. Oh, my God. But on the other hand, the government is stockpiling weapons, is stockpiling reserves of oil, is stock whatever the government stockpiles, we automatically salute it.
Right, and remember the alerts issued by the FBI a couple of weeks ago, which was covered on InfoWars quite extensively, that they said anybody who goes to a military surplus store and buys MREs, which and then stockpiles that food, might be a terrorist. It's almost like a Jeff Foxworthy joke. If you do this, you might be a redneck. It's like, yeah, if you have a tattoo, you might be a terrorist. If you buy food, you might be a terrorist. In other words, if you do what the government does, you might be a terrorist, but they're not. So, I mean, think about the government. They're stockpiling weapons, ammo, communications gear, medical supplies, resources, all kinds of things. I mean, underground bunkers, underground cities, in fact. But if you have more than 3 days' worth of food in your pantry, you're suspect? Give me a break.
This is part of the same crackdown, I believe, that happened to James Stewart and Rossum. They look around and they're looking, really, if you boil it down, for independence. You know, you can call it whatever you want to. This guy's thinking for himself. He's got, you know, 3 weeks' worth of food in his house. Uh-oh.
That's right.
This guy's selling raw milk. He's out of control. He's out of our control. Uh-oh. He's thinking for himself. We got to stomp on this guy's head. This is almost like saying to me, you know, the free market is a joke. That's what they're saying. It's a complete joke. We're not going to stand for the free market. This guy has a club in L.A., and he's got people that are willing to pick up milk from a farm, and they're part of the club. We're not going to allow that to happen. This is too free market. We want top-down control. Every bottle of milk has to be pasteurized.
That's true. The government wants to create victimization. They want people to be helpless and dependent because that gives government the justification for existence. And I've got one more paragraph to mention from this executive order, but I want to also say, John, I hope you and I can get into some positive solutions. We always talk about the problems, and I know we've also got great ideas on solutions. So let's think about what we can give listeners today on how they can stand up against this and take back their freedom and take back their liberty and take back their sovereignty as individual citizens of this great nation. But here's the section I want to read. And also, this is section 804C. This is the last paragraph of the executive order right before Obama's name signing the order. It says, listen to this, this order is not intended to and does not create any right or benefit enforceable at law, blah, 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 to agents or employees or any other person. In other words, it's saying that even though we, the government, are confiscating everything across the country, it does not give you, the people, any right or any benefit to any of those resources that have been confiscated. So it's, once again, very clever lawyer language, sufficiently vague, but if you read between the lines, what it really means is we, the government, can come take from you your food, your seeds, your solar panels, your cattle, your tractors, and you don't have any right or any control over any of it. That's exactly what this executive order states, and it can be initiated or triggered by any statement. It could be a press conference at the White House. We're now in a state of emergency, and we can't tell you why, because that's a national security secret, but we are. Trust us, we're the government. You see how that works, John?
Yeah, do I see how it works? I mean, I've known people that have had their computers confiscated by the cops or DAs, and trying to get those suckers back a week,
forget
a month,
it.
A year. Sometimes they never, we don't know where it is. It's lost in the system. So can you imagine this idea? When you say confiscation, they mean confiscation. In other words, you guys are back there, I don't know, it seemed like 4 or 5 years ago, you took all my farm equipment. You remember that when we had that storm? You know, oh yeah, I seem to remember that. Well, I'd like it back if you don't mind. Gee, we don't know where that is. We think it might be right in Argentina now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I actually have an interview on the record with a Central Texas farmer who said on camera, on the record, that FEMA was calling the farms. This was following Hurricane Katrina. FEMA was calling all the farms and inventorying all their crops, all their seeds, and all their equipment, asking what they had. And he told me that the farmers complied, and they gave them the list. And I said, well, wait a minute. Don't you realize FEMA is building a database of all the food you have, even food in the ground that hasn't even been harvested yet? Why do you think they would want such a database? And the answer is, well, yeah, I guess because they want to take it. They want to redistribute it, John. See, they want to reallocate it. So they want to take what's yours and give it to their people and call it, you know, national defense.
Speaking of solutions, the issue of freedom is, to me, the key. In other words, if anything is surviving this country from where it originally was framed in its founding documents, it is that idea of freedom. And yes. I know certainly in the medical area, and I believe it's also true politically, that when you bring up and you force the issue to be the issue of freedom, no matter what the government wants to twist it into, you have a chance. You have a fighting chance. For example, the government says that somebody is forced to take certain medications. You say, wait a minute. Are you saying that I have no freedom to decide whether a medicine goes in my body? You have a chance of fighting that way. You have a chance. And that's why freedom is so vital to be the central issue here.
I think it's crucial, John, that the listeners today assert their constitutional rights, their God-given rights, their natural law rights, to have ownership of private property, to have ownership and control over their own bodies, to have the fundamental God-given right to choose what kind of food you want to consume, what kind of medicine you wish to consume, and even as parents, to have the right to control the decisions of what your children drink, what your children get in terms of medicine, what they eat at school in terms of a brown bag lunch. And if you think about it, all of these things are under attack, every one of them. We saw the home gardener under attack in Michigan. That was Julie Bass. We've seen the brown bag lunches made by the parents under attack at schools now, where they have food police that make the kids eat chicken nuggets manufactured out of pink slime instead of the food brought from home made by their parents. We've seen farmers under assault, the Amish farmers, Vernon Hirschberger, hauled into court for his raw milk. Every one of these is under attack, including the right to own private property, as we've seen in this executive order. So I'm curious about your thoughts on this, John, but I would say the answer is, it always is, restore the Constitution. Restore the Bill of Rights. It's always the right answer. Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul. It's always the right answer.
Yeah. Restoring the Constitution, to me, is always the right answer. And part of that solution, by the way, and there are groups around you can find and explore, restore power to smaller units of government, like the states as opposed to the federal government, the counties as opposed to the states, the cities as opposed to the counties, and so on down the line. You can see in the 10th and 11th Amendments to the Constitution where that is explicitly stated in the Reserve Clause and other clause that has to do with freedom being really given back to the states. Now, people will argue about this and say, well, the states are corrupt and they're horrible and they always have been, and therefore we should have the federal government on top of the whole pile. This is absolutely not the case at this point in time. The states at least have a chance. And I can tell you just briefly, there are a number of states that could put into effect free market practices if they were free from federal control, that would make their states economic bonanzas. I won't get into details here, but it would work in a second. Mike, you were going to say?
Hey, if a state just legalized hemp farming, I'm talking industrial hemp,
there
not even smokable medicinal pot. I'm talking about industrial hemp that you can't even get high on. If a state like even Texas, let's say, if they legalize growing hemp, do you realize the economic abundance of the agricultural sector in Texas? Texas would be a massive exporter of hemp all across the country. Hemp seeds, hemp oils, hemp fibers, hemp textiles. It would be like, money raining out of the sky on Texas farmers. So why doesn't Texas legalize hemp or another state? Hemp grows in much of the country. It's a very abundant crop. It's just one example. There are thousands of these examples where we could restore economic prosperity and restore liberty at the same time.
Absolutely, Mike. And for example, in the area of alternative medicine, there are places where it's much harder to practice than others around the country. Well, if a state like California, for example, decided, look, we're really going to open the door, not just partway, but all the way to alternative practitioners under the mandate of do no harm, which can be easily framed into a law. It's been done in other states.
That's right.
And now, all of a sudden, California becomes the premier place for people who want to, by their own responsibility, to show up and get alternative medical treatments, alternative health treatments. Are you kidding? The economy of California would boom out the top in 6 months.
Absolutely.
And then the idea of these states giving back their rights to the federal government would never happen. Texas, we can't grow hemp anymore. Are you kidding? Never going to happen.
This is the thing. These solutions are right at our fingertips. They're readily available. All these people in Washington parade around like they're trying to figure out how to solve the economy. You know, people at the Federal Reserve and the banks. How do we solve the economy? Legalize freedom. That's how you solve the economic problem. Legalize it. You know, Jonathan Emory wrote a book, Restore the Republic. That's a good read. The intro was written by Ron Paul. It's a very important piece. You know, legalize freedom and abundance naturally follows. But that's exactly why that they're crushing liberty, because they don't want people to be free and to be abundant and to be innovative on their own. They're trying to crush the economy and crush freedom at the same time. And folks, if we don't wake up and turn this thing around, I mean, we could very easily be crossing a tipping point very soon where it's too late. So wake the heck up. Restore liberty now or you may lose it for generations.
And going along with that, Mike, is decentralize. That's the way to restore liberty in many areas, in many fronts. Decentralize the power. Who's got the power now? Well, the federal government does. The federal government, if they don't have the overt power, they have the power of the purse strings, because they can come into a school system or any industry and they can say, hey, we're dangling some money for you here, but if you want the money, you've got to do this. No thanks. We don't want it. No thank you. We don't need it. We're going to take back our own power at the state level, the county level, the city, the town, the village, the individual level.
You know, there's an interesting...
This is a trend.
The metaphor for this, which I'm sure you'll appreciate, John, is that in a human body, when power is decentralized and every cell plays its proper role, you have a healthy, functioning, holistic system. When you have a group of cells that tries to take over power and take over control, you know what that's called? A cancer tumor. What is big government today? An economic cancer tumor. It's the same. The metaphor applies. We have a cancer in our nation. It is called centralized command economy control. And these executive orders that we just talked about further that cancer. We must reverse this cancer and save the patient, which is our republic. We can only do that through holistic decentralization of power, support of the immune system of the nation, which is the people speaking out and saying we demand our rights as guaranteed under the Bill of Rights to restore the republic, restore our liberty, restore our economic abundance. I mean, it's all right there in front of us, John. It's not a mystery. It's a blueprint for liberty. It's right there in front of us if we just grab it. You know what I mean?
You bet, Mike. You bet I do. Absolutely right. When Alex and I were talking the other day in an interview that we did at InfoWars here, we got to the point where it was, you know, these guys who think of themselves and see themselves as masters and controllers, these elites, they're really committing suicide. This is really what they're doing. I mean, underneath it all, that's where they're going. The only problem is that they're tending to drag everybody else along with them. And it's just the analogy that you gave of cancer. That's how they're committing suicide. They're going out there to the point where they're restricting other people's freedom so much that they're destroying themselves in the process, because that's what happens when you try to restrict other people's freedoms beyond a certain point. That's what's going on. And they are truly suicidal.
Insane. You're right. They're suicidal. They're insane. Alex talks about it all the time. The global elite have pushed too far. They're so insane. I mean, they're sociopathic, insane demons almost from another dimension or something. I say that jokingly, but I mean, they are insane. They're so insane that they're going to destroy us at the same time they destroy themselves, and they don't care. Their quest for power will lead to their own destruction, and they can't see that happening because they're just completely infected with insanity. That's why those of us who are sane, who are rational, who can put the pieces of the puzzle together, who can connect the dots, who can see what's about to happen, we must rise up peacefully and with knowledge and with wisdom and say enough is enough. Let's turn this thing around. Let's get to some solutions. Let's legalize freedom in this country. Go ahead, John.
Okay. We're going to take a break here and then come back for the last segment. This is John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. We're talking about your freedom, our freedom, everybody's freedom, and what's at stake here in this global insanity. John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show. You can visit me at nomorefakenews.com. naturalnews.com for Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Mike, in this last segment here, I think it'll be interesting to mention a little bit about celebrities. You know, back in the health freedom days of the early 90s, there were a lot of celebrities like James Earl Jones, Mel Gibson, Mariel Hemingway, Lindsay Wagner, who came out in favor of the freedom of the people to have their choice in whatever food they really wanted to eat or milk to drink or supplements to take. And now, all of a sudden, we don't see celebrities showing up in public speaking on behalf of freedom, as you're talking about. A whole change has occurred in a matter of a little over, 15, 20 years here. It's very strange to me.
There's so much pressure now, political pressure in Hollywood, that these celebrities have learned that when they speak out, they get punished financially. They lose roles in movies. Their careers go down the tubes. And it's only celebrities who have a lifetime of success that aren't afraid to speak out who are actually doing so. For example, Suzanne Somers, to her credit, has put out a book challenging the cancer industry. She interviewed complementary and alternative cancer doctors all across the country. I don't recall the title of that book at the moment, but you can search Suzanne Somers anywhere and find the book. And that was a really amazing, wonderful investigative work. And of course, she was attacked for doing that. There are others who are attacked for speaking out. And you're right, John. It's a shame that the political environment today favors those who stay silent, because that's exactly the opposite of what we need. We must speak out. And for those listening today, too, freedom is not a spectator sport. You've got to take action, or we will lose this republic very, very quickly.
Decentralizing freedom has a precedent. It has a program. It's a thing that can be done. To try to bring more power down locally, you see, from this top-heavy, gigantic colossus, all the way to the individual. And there are steps, and there are organizations, and there are things that you can explore here. This is not just, we're not just talking hot air here, folks. Mike put his finger on it. Legislate freedom. Doing that changes everything. And then more people begin to show up all of a sudden. They say, oh yeah, freedom, I forgot that. You know, I've been reading the newspapers for the last 15 years, and come to think of it, I've never seen the word individual with the word freedom next to it. Isn't that amazing? You know, where did that go? Yeah, well, we're bringing it back, folks. We're bringing it back.
Well, you think about the role that the government is trying to take now. It's the role of saving you from yourself, which was brilliantly illustrated in the South Park episode of the TSA, the Toilet Safety Administration. Brilliant. Because this one woman fell in the toilet, now everybody has to have toilet seatbelts. Well, we've got to stop thinking of the government as our savior. We've got to start thinking about the government as only one role being important: protecting our liberties and our rights. Life is dangerous. Driving in a car is dangerous. Downhill skiing is dangerous. We've got to stop thinking the government can save us from every little thing and start taking responsibility for our own lives and dealing with a little bit of danger. Hey, I drove through some water today, 3 feet of water flooding across my driveway to get here. Was that dangerous? Yeah. So what? I'm here anyway. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to be part of this liberty effort. Thanks for having me on today, John.
Hey, Mike. It's great to have you on. and talk to you. We're heading down here, countdown to the end of the show. We've talked about a lot of issues here, political, medical, maybe a little bit more medical than you're used to hearing. I thought it was important to get it out because it does impact on your freedom. That's the bottom line here. That's the power that can't be destroyed. Mike Adams, thanks so much. John Rappaport sitting in for Alex Jones. We'll see you again. Thanks, Alex.